Bergy Lights LED lamps, as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey solar charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, and the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Major Doug Rocky, who's retired from the military. But he was an officer in charge of decontamination after the nuclear biological, but primarily radiological warfare that occurred over there, because, of course, many of our vehicles were actually hit with depleted uranium shells that we shot. They were actually friendly fire, but, of course, these vehicles were contaminated. The people inside were contaminated, but the vehicles were contaminated, and his job was to get them cleaned up. And, of course, he's worked with radiological warfare for a long time, but he, of course, had paid a terrible, terrible price because of his own health and the health of so many of the men who were in his unit over there. And he's been an outspoken opponent of the use of depleted uranium, and, of course, very concerned about the Gulf War syndrome that has destroyed the lives of hundreds of thousands of our young men who fought in the Gulf War, in the first Gulf War. And according to Doug Rocky, and I've seen the statistics, I've been to the VA site where he recommends, over 80,000 of those young, healthy men who went to the Gulf War in 1990, are now dead. They're no longer living, according to the VA's own statistics. So with that as the background, Doug, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, good evening.
So you picked the story up there.
Yeah, it's, boy, it's a story. It's more like a nightmare, I think. I think that's the easy way to describe it. When Desert Storm launched back in 1990, what we had done, we had set everything up to ensure, by baiting and switching Saddam Hussein, to ensure that the U.S. military could get a military force presence in the Persian Gulf. And we've never left, and we continue to escalate that. But during Desert Storm, because of the weapons we used and the techniques we used and the destruction of Iraq and Kuwait, which you have to understand were very advanced societies with the same medical, engineering, manufacturing, education facilities that we prize so highly in Western worlds. It was a Western nation, very, very advanced with, in some cases, medical and education and industrial facilities better than we have here in our nation, until we decided to destroy it and everything else. So what happened is we went to war. And prior to Desert Storm, the United States military had deliberately and willfully given to Iraq chemical and biological weapons for use on the Iranians, because we didn't like them, and then the Iraqi Kurds. And as a consequence, it turned into a nightmare. Well, in December of 1990, we made the conscious decision at the command headquarters to destroy Iraq's chemical and biological stockpiles in place, because we knew exactly what they had and where they had them, because the U.S. Army gave it to them, and very specifically, weaponized anthrax. It's astonishing how we set things up, and then it turns into a mess, isn't it?
Well, I you never know what the motivation is. I cannot believe in my own mind that our leaders were so foolish. They would have blown up all those chemical and biological warfare units and not known that some of our own troops would because be contaminated with that. But go right ahead.
Well, they knew perfectly well, because if you go to Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero, and go to page 390, you can read about our decision. And you can read about our warnings that the health problems would come about. And General Chuck Horner is cited in there. And in fact, myself, Denise Nichols, met with Chuck in 2001, 10 years after the fact, when they brought all the command staff back together to, so you know, kind of like recognize the 10th year anniversary.
Hold that thought, we're going to be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. My guest this afternoon is Major Doug Rocky, retired from the military, who is an expert in radiological warfare and served, of course, in the first Gulf War. Where the real problem came, not only certainly with the fact that we were using depleted uranium shells, you know, which, of course, had active uranium in them. They tell you it's depleted, but that simply is to confuse you. But where the real problem came was when the command decision was made to destroy these massive amounts of chemical and biological warfare supplies that we had actually given to Saddam Hussein, not only the chemical warfare, but the anthrax, which we had actually transferred to him so he could develop these weapons to be used against the Iranians and Kurds. But we could never let the American people know that. My goodness, they would perhaps believe that they'd been lied to, so they decided to blow them up. And they blew up massive deposits in a number of places. And of course, this all went up in the air. And instead of simply burying them and leaving there where they wouldn't do any harm, and why they blew them up and they contaminated our own troops. But then we couldn't let the American people know that. They consistently lied. Do you remember back then? I can remember. They said there were absolutely no, chemical, biological warfare contamination. Well, maybe just a little bit, a few troops, maybe a few thousand troops, maybe 5,000 troops, maybe 50,000 troops. They simply lied, ladies and gentlemen. As they say, in war, the first casualty is the truth. But, of course, when you're dealing with government, the casualty is always the truth, because there are very wicked people at the highest levels, not our government. Our government, I believe, is a noble government, but there's an invisible government made up of ruthless and wicked people. So you pick up the story there, Major.
Yeah, and then what we continued to do beyond that, and we have to understand, we not only started blowing that up in December 1990, which you can verify in the autobiography, but you continued on, and then, you know, Scott Ritter and his team continued to blow them up. So in preparation for Iraqi freedom and during freedom, General Powell and everybody, and Chuck Cheney, who were all involved in our original decision, as you can verify in the autobiography, knew there wasn't anything. So we had that. So we had a real mess. We had this, they had it, we blew it up, we destroyed it, we released it, made everybody sick, and then claimed that they had it again to go back in, which was not true. But as we waged warfare, we destroyed the infrastructure. So we have the agricultural sector, the industrial sector, the medical sector, and the educational sector, which we blew up and released in all of these toxic industrial compounds.
You're talking now about all of these sectors in Iraq that we destroyed, and of course they were contaminated by the very weapons that we had given to Saddam Hussein, that now, of course, we're contaminating them as well as the... We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, Major Doug Rocky, and we're talking about the tragedy of Iraq. As we destroyed this first world nation, we destroyed the very infrastructure, so that even today, in many parts of Iraq, there's no electricity, maybe a couple of hours a day, no sewage, no water steady. We destroyed the infrastructure of that country in the name of course, bringing them freedom and democracy. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so we have all of that happening. And then as we moved our military forward, obviously we have to use all kinds of hazardous materials that are used in our vehicles and our equipment for repair and maintenance that we do in our in and around our facilities. And we're generating sewage and we're generating waste all over, just like any city does, except it's far more dangerous. And so we had that released all over the place. And in fact, General Tommy Franks, I guess it was late April, had me go up in his G4. The two of us were ordered to go clean up the hazardous waste dump for the 7th Corps. And basically we did what we could, and we buried it in the desert, you know, in Saudi Arabia at KKMC, and that's created a nightmare. So we had all of that. So then we had, in addition to all of this stuff, as we go to war, we knew there were going to be medical problems. We knew there were going to be biological and chemical warfare stuff. So there was a whole host of current and experimental vaccines that the soldiers were given, and nothing was done there. The anthrax vaccine, botulism toxin vaccines, all different kinds of things. So we had a whole mess there. So it turned into a toxic nightmare, complete and total misuse of pesticides. And because we knew that Iraq had nerve agents, because the U.S. gave it to them, the Army gave it to them, we had the troops eat pyridostigmine bromide, which is they call it an anti-nerve gas pill, but what it is actually is a carbamate-based pesticide that's reversible when you administer the atropine, diazepam, and proxidine chloride, so that you can release the synaptic junctions and keep function. Because if you don't have junctions that you can release with the antidote, when you get hit by the sarin, cycloserine, Tabun, Soman, Novichok's, and multiple 7 that Iraq did have at that time, because we gave it to them, and England gave it to them, and Germany gave it to them, the Soviets gave it to them, but we destroyed, you couldn't recover from it. So it turned into a mess. And then along came uranium munitions. They are the most effective weapon known to man. You fire them out of a machine gun, out of a rifle, from an aircraft, the A-10, Warthog aircraft's incredible use. You fire from a Bradley or a Marine Corps lab, and you fire them from the tanks, and they literally destroy each and anything they hit. They're extraordinarily effective against apartment buildings, water treatment facilities, sewage sanitation plants, cars and trucks, and, of course, a handful of tanks. But if this stuff is, it's incredibly effective, because anything that hit just instantaneously goes to nothing. The uranium round is a solid rod of uranium, consisting primarily of uranium-238. It has uranium-234, uranium-235, uranium-236, plutonium, neptunium, and americium in them. So there's nothing depleted about the health hazards or the radiological risks from uranium munitions.
And basically, of course, this is just the metal that's left over after they take the 235 or most of the uranium-235 out, but it's still got all the other uraniums there in it.
Yeah, it is. At the Paducah, Kentucky, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Portsmouth, Ohio, the U.S. Department of Energy extracts a very small fraction of U-235 from the mixture. For example, if I have 100 pounds, I'll have 99.2 pounds uranium-238, 0.7 pounds uranium-235, and 0.1 pounds uranium-234. The Department of Energy, it is at Richmond facility, takes out 0.6 pounds. That's all. So 99.4 pounds of all this mixture that remains, which is then, you got a small percent, primarily all the 238s left. You have 234, 235, and the other stuff. So what you have is still a radiological cocktail that's depleted only a very, very small fraction of couple isotopes, but you have overall waste, and that's uranium hexafluoride is the actual chemical compound that comes out of the reaction vessels, and then this is processed to make uranium, depleted uranium or uranium munitions.
Well, I think that they call it depleted just to confuse the common folks out there. But
absolutely.
It's really, of course, it's really many countries consider this basically a radiological warfare, and many countries have banned its use. But the average American doesn't understand that. And, of course, the military wants to use it because it's such an effective means of killing. But the trouble is it can kill our own people, too, from contamination. And once, of course, it's been fired, it burns. And, of course, it hits something, it burns. But then there's this radioactive dust that contaminates everything. But go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, so what happens, I have to understand, we have different uranium weapons. In the U.S. inventory, we have kinetic energy penetrators. These are gigantic darts of uranium. The Navy fires a 20-millimeter from Navy Phalanx. It's a half pound of solid uranium. The Air Force, the U.S. Army fires a 25-millimeter, which is a half pound of uranium, from the Bradley fighting vehicle in the Marine Corps lab. The U.S. Air Force fires a 30-millimeter from the A-10 Warthog aircraft and different fighters and some of the, machine guns on the helicopters, and that's about 0.75 pounds of uranium. Then you have, up and beyond that, in the kinetic energy penetrators, you have the tank rounds, 105-millimeter, 120, 125-millimeter for the Israeli and the British. In addition to those, what you have is you have the cluster bombs, and these are called ADAM and PDAM. The acronym is ADAM and PDM. These are military acronyms. And what these look like are gigantic softballs where the outer casing is uranium and is filled with high explosive. Then we have the bunker busters. The AGM-28, for example, is about 5,000 pounds of uranium and high explosive, and the cruise missiles. The other thing we have are machine gun bullets, the 7.62 machine gun or the rifle, and then the Barrett 50 cal rifle, sniper rifle. Barrett brags about how well the DU round works in it right on their own website. So we've got a whole host of uranium weapons that are effective against all known targets, and so they shoot them at anything because they're actually more effective against a wooden structure because they start massive fires than they are against a tank.
But of course, what happens to that area after that's been contaminated with the depleted uranium dust? What about the use of that for agriculture? What about that being habitable by human beings in future generations?
It's not usable. One thing that we learned when I did all the research for the U.S. Army as the director of the depleted uranium project at the Nevada test site in Mercury, Nevada. Now, we had already had the ideas of what happened during Iraq as we cleaned it up firsthand, treating casualties, cleaning up the messes, okay? But then we did research in Nevada test site in Mercury, Nevada for 2 years. That's a DOE site, and all over Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland, Fort McClellan in Alabama, all over wherever we could get things done. And it scared us because we found out that the amount of contamination is so great, and the Army adopted it, that you can't go within 150 feet of any single incident without wearing full respiratory and skin protection. And that means to protect your, nothing can get in and nothing can get through. But what we do know today, what got all of us, is the respiratory protection that the Army provided and the U.S. Department of Energy provided to us during research was totally ineffective. And so all of our lungs were gone, and everybody else had messed up. And what is really scary, not even an hour ago, I had a call from another soldier who's never received the care. He was at Camp Doha in the summer of 1991. There was a fire, and all the uranium and the chem bio stuff blew up there. And he's had very serious medical problems, and he got my name and number, and he called me about an hour ago, hour and a half ago. And it's the same thing, day in and day out. Hundreds of thousands of our sons and daughters have very serious medical problems due to all of the toxic exposures in war, from Desert Storm into Iraqi freedom and enduring freedom. But then we got to go back, to Vietnam with Agent Orange. We got to go to Project Shad, and we can go on back to the nuclear bombs and the nuclear testing for World War II.
Well, it's a tragic situation, but of course, so many of our veterans can't get good or adequate care, and of course, they basically what they do is just delay and delay and delay, both financial benefits and medical benefits. And
yeah.
Haven't they actually shredded a lot of the records so that they won't have to provide benefits to the people?
That's absolutely confirmed. You can go to www.armytimes.com or even the VA websites, and we've total confirmation, not only were records deliberately shredded at the regional offices by the VA and documents that come in or they're misplaced, but the other thing which was totally confirmed about 2 weeks ago is tens of thousands of claims that came in and information to help in the village vets, sick and ill wounded vets get medical care were just shoved in bags and stashed in a corner. So we have all of those problems. The other problem that we have is not only in action on the claims where the person can't get into medical care, but once they do get into medical care in the VA doctors totally disavow or deny any correlation between exposures and all of the medical problems, and their claim is, well, it's not in the peer-reviewed literature, so it didn't happen. And then we're going, yeah, but it's in the original reports. Don't you want to see those?
Well, of course, they can alter the peer-reviewed literature. Unfortunately, there are physicians who will do anything just to get a payment, and tragically, science, when you live in an immoral society, is not necessarily science, a search for the truth. It's what's expedient, what's going to get you ahead, and if you're in the military, you toe the line or else. And the same thing if you're in the Veterans Administration. How many of the survivors of the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, have died? Do you actually have those figures?
Yeah, if you go to www.va.gov, the actual Department of Veteran Affairs website, and once you get there, you'll get this search page. In the upper right-hand corner is a white search block, and you want to type in the acronym GWVIS, and that stands for Gulf War Veterans Information System. And from that, you'll be able to pull up the Gulf War, the Griffiths reports going back for several years. Sadly, there has not been another report published on the website as of the other day for over a year, even though they're supposed to be done quarterly. And that's because the numbers were getting to be so huge, and we're looking somewhere over around 76,000 individuals have died from Desert Storm, and we're looking at the approximate, and that last report is around 280. It's about 300,000 individuals participated that are still alive that have submitted for permanent claims with the VA.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, you're saying about 280,000 have applied. Have they got their claims through?
No, there's, I mean, 30 to 40,000 have had denied, their claims have been completely denied. And that's really sad. Because one of the things we have to understand, with the uranium exposures, the medical testing that's actually set up by order from the Pentagon, and I was involved in putting it together, requires a radio bioassay within 24 hours of exposure. After 30 days, unless you got super sensitive tests, you won't even measure it because it's not mobile in the urine, and you don't find it in the blood. So there's no, you know, no real simple, convenient test to find it. And so what they just do is wait and delay any testing, and they claim, well, there's nothing there. But what you do is, if you do get a test and you know they were exposed, you can do extrapolate back mathematically on the actual radiological handbook, medical handbook that tells you how to extrapolate back to determine what the actual exposure was. And that's what we did myself, my exposures, and it was just right on the money. But what we're seeing today is a snapshot of technology gone crazy. We have radiological materials that are released causing serious adverse health effects on everybody involved. We have chemical compounds, inorganic or organic chemical compounds, biological materials of all different types. So we got heavy metals, organic solvents, and everything. And it's zapping the military horribly. So as a consequence, we have hundreds of thousands from Desert Storm. We have, you know, over 400,000, 500,000 from Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom. And these individuals are continually day in and day out fighting to get prompt and optimal medical care for a complete toxic environment exposure.
Well, of course, what can they really do? Is there any way to get the toxic metals out of them? Will chelation work?
Well, one of the things we did, the idea, if we could get through, and as a physician you've done this stuff, if you could get rapid chelation, you know, in a hospital under a doctor's charge, you might be able to get a small portion of the mobile, soluble fraction. But the majority of it is insoluble and it's not mobile, so you can't remove it with chelation. In my case, what they wanted to do, some in a research physicians in a major hospital, they wanted to, some years after the fact, do lung lavage and see if they could clean the lungs out. Because the primary exposure, again, is inhalation, and the stuff gets in the lungs. The particulates of uranium are so small, they act like a gas, even though they're soluble, and they're actually smaller than the inner diameter of red blood cells that are deposited all over the body to wreak havoc. Medically, the only thing you can do today is optimize remaining function, and that's through maximum nutrition, again, just like it's all been totally balanced, extremely high in protein across all the four food groups. But then again, you can't drink caffeine, you can't drink, you know, that's coffee or pop, you can't drink alcohol, you shouldn't be smoking, and you sure need to maintain your exercise and your rest. That's about all you can do. And then other than that, you have to do the physical repair, you know, physically surgical medical repair like, you know, as an orthopedic surgeon would do.
Well, now, my understanding is that certainly that we have literally hundreds of thousands of people ill from the first Gulf War, from the Gulf War illness in the First World War, First Gulf War. What about the Second Gulf War? Do we have similar problems?
Yeah, it's actually worse. It's worse this time. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs' last report, which you've seen from January of 2009, confirms that it was over 400,000. And the whole host goes everything from neurological to neuromuscular to gastrointestinal.
Now, hold that thought. We're going to bring our stations on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Major Doug Rocky. And I asked if certainly we know that hundreds of thousands of men from the first Gulf War were ill with Gulf War illness. And the government and the Veterans Administration kept insisting there is no disease. It's all psychological. There's no Gulf War illness. And now, of course, studies are coming out, scientific studies that show a severe illness from Gulf War illness. But this is what happened with Agent Orange. They lied to the American people, and they lied to the veterans and made them feel they must be somehow crazy after Vietnam, because there was nothing, no damage done from the docs and the Agent Orange. And only, 20 or 30 years later, it became obvious that there was a planned program of deceit. Well, they did the same thing with the first Gulf War illness, and they're still covering this up, although there are a number of recent reports that verify the Gulf War illness is very real, and there are things that will help. Certainly, they may not cure, but they will help and return people to a functional activity. But I was just asking Doug about the second Gulf War, the one we're fighting now in Iran, in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And Doug was saying that this is even worse today. Why is it worse today? And how many people do we have who fought in the Iraq and Afghanistan who are chronically ill and disabled as a result of their exposures?
We've got over 400,000 as of January of this last January. And when we look at the type of diagnoses that we're seeing, we have to understand what happened this round, okay? And this time, in contrast to Operation Desert Storm, the exposures that I have are uranium munitions again, depleted uranium. I have total misuse of pesticides again, totally confirmed. The other thing that I have is all the hazardous materials exposures again, and then we have the immunizations. So again, what we're seeing are a mirror image of what we saw in Desert Storm, but with a few less exposures. And from this, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs published a report in January. It's called Analysis of VA Healthcare Utilization Among U.S. Global War on Terrorism Veterans. And this is January 2009, so it was released and then. And when we come down to it and look at the statistics, the demographics, the majority of these individuals are between the ages of 20, 29, 50% of them. We got 22% are up, between 30 and 39, and then the rest are all scattered all over. And again, primarily Army, and then the rest, 64% are Army, and then 12% scattered amongst the rest of the services. What we do know is that as of January, 400,304 individuals, now this is well over 40%, have gone to the VA for medical care. We have 49,000 with infectious and parasitic diseases. We have 4,000 confirmed malignant cancers, 17,000 benign cancers, metabolic, nutritional, 93,000, leukemias, it's at 9,600, leukemia. Well, uranium munitions affects the RNA and DNA in the cell. It affects the red blood cells. We know that if you pee on your hand with uranium, we know it's positive for the Ames test. We know that uranium, is positive for the Ames test. PTSD, 178,000. Neurological problems, serious neurological problems. This is due to demyelination and everything else. So you have peripheral neuropathy and central function problems. 147,000.
Now, these would be things like MS, Lou Gehrig's disease, peripheral
neuropathy. Correct. It shows up as an MS or ALS.
Right.
And then what you have is just all these neurological problems that compromise everything. Cardiac problems, circulatory. These are very young kids. We got 68,000 with serious cardiac problems.
And, of course, what this would do, that would be to damage not only the myocardium, but the conduction in the heart. Now, you're talking, these are all healthy young people who went overseas to fight for their country, thinking that somehow they were opposing, a terrorism, or somehow they were, trying to stop Saddam Hussein from using weapons of mass destruction on the United States. These weapons of mass destruction, most of them had been actually destroyed by our own government. They knew they weren't there, but they had to lie to the American people to get us to go along with the war. And they lie, and they lie, and they lie. And then they round up people, innocent people, and they torture them. What has America become?
I don't know. When we look at the circulatory problems, we get in the respiratory, they're tied together. They're very tied together very closely. My colonel has an enlarged heart. The soldier that called me, 2 hours ago has an enlarged heart. we're looking at all kinds of valve malfunctions, and we're talking about incomplete pumping. So, again, the problem there. One of the things that Denise Nichols and, again, the researchers have done is on hypercoagulation. So we're seeing these young kids throw emboli or clots, and boom, they're gone. That's why we see so many dropping dead all over the place. I go to Army Times right now, another one dropped dead a few hours ago. The respiratory problems, horrific lung problems. With the uranium and the other one, specifically uranium, what we see is there is calcified granulomas. So it's like they have emphysema and they have asthma. Except constriction, they're drowning out and loss of elasticity in the lung.
Well, if you want to destroy a nation, what you do would be to send your men over to fight in a no-win war and then cripple them from your own weapons. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Major Doug Rocky, and go ahead, pick up the story, Doug.
Yeah, then we have 129, about around 130,000 with digestive problems, explosive diarrhea. And that has just turned into an absolute nightmare. And, I mean, the doctors are trying to figure out what do they do with the explosive diarrhea that goes between diarrhea and clogged like concrete, okay? And we know we got some biological warfare agents that have been diagnosed that were produced by the U.S. military that you don't find on the street, and so they come up with different treatments for that. And so we got 130,000 with explosive diarrhea and all of this stuff. We come down to general unitary, got 45,000. The rashes are rampant. Again, right at 67,000 from Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. Same thing, you know, huge numbers from Desert Storm. Muscular skeletal connective tissues are a nightmare, 197,000. What you get diagnosed and what we see and what I've got diagnosed, it mimics fibromyalgia. And again, fibromyalgia causes all kinds of additional problems. We have tremendous cervical spine injuries, tremendous lumbar spine injuries. And those come from explosions and wearing all this heavy equipment or getting rattled around in vehicles, tanks and Bradleys and Abrams and, you know what I mean, everything else. Severe problem. And then 92,000 injuries and poisonings. This is only from Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And so then this is for the guys that have gone out and gone there. Now, we don't know what the numbers are on active duty, but we do know from recent reports, and again in the last few days, we have active units where you have lots and lots of individuals are injured, ill, and they're being redeployed, and they're not medically fit to go back to combat. They have loss of hearing in one ear, or they have hearing problems in both ears. They have decreased vision. They've got respiratory. They've got all of these problems. And the commanders just say, because we need you, you're going. And we disregard the serious medical problems that they have, and then they get more and more complex, and then they crash, and they die.
Well, you certainly don't want to send anybody into combat who's not on the, in tip-top physical condition.
Yeah, there don't. I mean, if you go to Army Times, www.armytimes.com, and look at the stories for the last few days, there was a huge story on the deployment of all kinds of medically unfit and incapable individuals that belong in a hospital or medically discharged from Alaska. I mean, the story is live on there. There's another story about Allam at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, where these guys are just basically abandoned and mistreated while they're in medical treatment and medical hold companies called the Warrior Transition Unit.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Major Doug Rocky. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Major Doug Rocky, retired from the military, certainly a victim of the Gulf War illness, primarily, at least in part, by the depleted uranium. He worked with us as a specialist. He wrote many of the manuals on depleted uranium and that are still utilized by the military. Now, Doug, would you like to go ahead and, I know you don't have a website, but where could our listeners learn more about the Gulf War illness and about depleted uranium?
Well, the best individuals that did the work, and you should interview them, were Sonny Miller and Charlie Jinks, who ran the old Trap Rock Peace Center. And, you know, they had a hostile takeover. But they're still maintaining a website. And these are incredible people. And that website is www.grassrootspeace.org. G-R-A-S-R-O-O-T-S-Peace, P-E-A-C-E, www.uforeport.org.
No, and of course, how were they taken over? Was this just an conscious effort to subvert and then take it over to silence it so the information wouldn't be getting out?
Correct. And that
it was an intelligence operation then, probably.
Pardon me?
It was an intelligence operation
of
some sort.
Yeah, Department of Defense intelligence operation. All of us are continuously threatened and everything else. And they threaten you. They take away your medical care, delay your medical care, affect your retirement, threaten anybody that speaks out. They'll run you off the road. They'll shoot out your windows. It's pretty intense. And then they put lies out on the Internet that you weren't there or didn't do the work, and you run into a problem. Especially when you're trying to get medical care for your injuries or wounds, because the VA doctor and the other one said, well, you didn't have this because you weren't there, because the Army says you weren't there, until they see the original documents, and then they freak out.
And because what they've done is they've tried to spread as many of the documents as they can so people can't prove where they were.
That is correct. And so what we do know, and I've gone personally with, several of us have gone down to the National Records Center of St. Louis, Missouri, we absolutely went into the vault and verified the records were gone. Some are removed. What happened down at Fort McClellan when I was director of the Depleted Uranium Project and sick and ill and, seeing all this stuff happen is our medical records were taken out of the hospital and put into a special vault to prevent the doctors or anybody else from seeing the correlation between the exposures and the health effects. And so that's happened all over the place. And again, that's the same thing where the VA now is, once they do get in, why we've confirmed that they've shredded records and they're, hiding or shredding documents that support this stuff. They don't want the correlation known between hundreds of thousands. It's close over a million casualties now as a result of not enemy fire, but as a result of our failures to act or the actions that we took. Warfare today is a toxic nightmare. And what we're seeing with the million casualties and the sons and daughters that are there showing up more and more is a snapshot of what happens when you use all kinds of chemical, biological, and radiological materials in agriculture, industry, education, medicine, or specifically in the military, and then healthy people are exposed. It's a warning. It's a warning, and that's why the National Academy of Sciences, the Institute of Medicine, the Center for Disease Control are so reluctant to acknowledge anything or admit anything except what they publish in their controlled peer-reviewed literature.
Well, it's a shame that so many young idealistic people, their lives have been shattered and destroyed, and they can get neither financial compensation or adequate medical care. But, you see, they can't let the public know about this because they did the average, and a young man, idealistic as he is, would probably not volunteer for medical service. And they can't have that. We have to have an army to maintain our empire. That's why we have our troops in 131 nations throughout the world. But we can't tell the American people. We've got to think they're there for idealism. Well, everything is idealism. We're there to help the people. And that's really not true at all. We're there for political purposes. And, of course, we want to dominate the Middle East. And, of course, since our major thrust is to create a world government, there can be no country that is not under our control. And the last country I can think of was Nepal, where we, of course, installed a Marxist government there. But we've got dictators in so many countries throughout the world. But we can't let the American people know that. We have to make them think that they're democratically elected. And then we send over the electronic voting machines that rig the elections to elect the people that our invisible government, not our visible government, but our invisible government wants. Well, Doug, what recourse do people have? You mentioned really how many of them are people today have well over 100,000 totally incapacitated by explosive diarrhea. I mean, 60 or 70,000 have chronic rashes. These are the victims of the latest Gulf War. And that these figures are not gotten out, and still young people, foolish young people, are volunteering to go over to fight for the American empire without ever understanding our country's been taken over by people who have a different vision. So what can the average person do about it?
Well, what you have to do is education and knowledge and dissemination of information. So if you get the information and you read it, you understand it, and you share it. The other thing which is extremely important, and what I was doing, it was when I was at the VA yesterday for my own care, and it's turned into an interesting situation, is that I sat down with the VA chaplain, and he said, Doug, you're doing a good job as a veterans advocate, but we need a lot more of us. We need a lot more to help everybody. Because those of us that are wounded, ill, and injured ourselves, we're trying to take care of ourselves at the same time we're trying to take care of all the other individuals. It's like tonight. I mean, out of the blue, about 2 hours ago, I had another call from another very sick and injured veteran that needed help. And again, he had the same thing, but one of the things that scared him is he absolutely knows he's got an enlarged heart and other stuff, too. So what we're going to have to do is set up to get medical care for him. Last few days and a few weeks, I've been working with individuals whose medical care I personally ordered back in February of 1991 because they were involved in friendly fire incidents. And as the theater health physicist, you know, I put all that medical care together, followed up by so many orders, it's staggering. The one thing that we're working on is helping me personally is General Eric Shinseki has now been appointed the Secretary of the Department of Veteran Affairs. Well, in August of 1993, he personally signed the order mandating medical care for uranium casualties to complete all thorough environmental remediation of contamination every place and provide training to everybody in the military. We do know, and I do know as of yesterday, soldiers that I talked to that just came back at the VA hospital seeking care did not have the training, and they never got the medical care. And that's what's happened continuously day in and day out. We have to understand, if the Department of Defense officials acknowledge that all of these toxic exposures are the causing all of these hundreds of thousands and millions of casualties, then mom, the mothers, the fathers, the brothers, the sisters, the aunts, the uncles, the grandparents, the spouses are going to put a stop to it real fast. We can't go to war, use the weapons we do, destroy the infrastructures that are in place, and not expect all of these toxic exposures. For example, in Iraq and Afghanistan current times, and this is extensively researched and reported by Kelly Kennedy on Army Times website, www.armytimes.com. The military and everything was just having open pit burning everything under the sun, anything that would burn. And as a consequence of toxic exposures and all the health effects have been devastating. But the Department of Defense, Dr. Kilpatrick and Dr. Winkenwerder, simply deny any correlation between the guys that were right there exposed and sick today. It's astonishing. It's criminal.
Well, of course, I know you're doing a good job trying to get the things out. Joyce Riley, our good friend from the Power Hour, had suggested I call you, and I think she's on the front lines, and I hope her radio program, you know, I know is reaching a lot of veterans' families, and letting them understand these things are not imaginary. These people are not crazy. They are sick and they're ill. And, of course, there's an organized, orchestrated effort on the part of the Veterans Administration to deprive them of the care, the medical care, and certainly the financial compensation they've been promised. But, you know, promises and $5 will get you a cup of coffee almost anywhere in America today.
Now, Joyce Riley, let's come back to Joyce. Not everybody knows. Joyce does the radio show with her husband, okay? But Joyce is a medevac, Air Force medevac nurse. She was flying medevac missions, bringing back all the serious casualties out of these war zones for years. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Joyce is a personal friend. We've been together many times. So,
you know, so we have that. Now, one of the things we have to talk about, and this is very important, what you'll hear in the news all over the place, and the RAND Corporation has published stuff, and it's coming out, the suicides and the PTSD rates are staggering for both Desert Storm and especially Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And what we have here is all kinds of psychological effects that are caused by physiological toxic exposures in addition to the peeing in your pants scare. So what we are seeing is a lot of physiological conditions that result in psychological problems. But they're not being treated as such. Now, slowly, we're getting more and more doctors to see the interrelationship, because if I have somebody that, say, for example, has a psychosis, but he's having serious neurological or respiratory or cardiac problems, we know that the brain is not getting adequate perfusion, both oxygen and nutrition, so it's not going to work. And then because these guys don't have anything, any place to go for help, they turn inwards, and then all of a sudden they crash, and the next thing we know, they're committing suicide. And the suicide numbers are just absolutely increasing, incredibly high in the military.
Well, weren't some of those actually related to some of the medication that they were giving them for
absolutely.
Malaria? Right.
Absolutely. One of the things that we do know today, and this is the thing that's just changed in the last, this week, there's a, one thing we have to worry, a lot of areas of military goes, there's a thing called malaria, okay? Malaria is a very serious, serious disease. The primary drug for malaria is, the common name is Larium, in other words, and so, or, you know, the different Quinn drugs. And what they have found out here recently, last Monday, is the U.S. Army has suspended all use of the malaria drugs, Larium, because it has serious psychological effects. And what they were happening, seeing as individuals with the toxic exposures combined, were increasing the suicide rates. And so that's a real serious problem for on the malaria drug. Now, what we have to consider, now this comes back to the civilians, okay? It comes back very, very clear to the civilians, and we need to consider this, okay? If the civilians, and especially with spring break coming on, the students are taken off down south, okay? Well, if they're prescribed Larium, okay, which is actually the Mlequin, they need to be very, very careful. Because the military suspended all use because of psychological and permanent brain damage and permanent neurological damage is now being attributed to and verified happens from that malaria drug. So, again, here we have a problem within the soldiers that's directly applicable to the spring break students that are going into areas and they're taking the malaria drugs right now. Welcome to hardcore reality of medicine and environmental exposures.
Well, it's a great tragedy. I wish we had a better solution. I mean, we used to have some things we gave that were taken for years, quinine and a few of the very simple malaria drugs, but we had to get something much more dramatic than that, and the terrible consequences was so many of the new drugs that are put on the market not to help people, but of course they're put on with inadequate evaluation or with flawed evaluation. They know very well that they're lethal. And they put them on the market anyway. That's the great tragedy. And no one in the pharmaceutical industry is ever held responsible. Oh, they may put out a few billion dollars to pay off the survivors or the families of the survivors, but the criminal activity of people within the pharmaceutical industry really, of course, is never punished. Because they have friends at the highest levels of government. They give tremendous amounts of money to the congressmen, so they can be sure they'll get off scot-free, even after murder, which is what a lot of this is. Well, Doug, certainly as far as our veterans are concerned, do we have any idea how many have died after they've come home from the Second Gulf War?
Oh, boy. Again, I'm gonna go back to the VA reports, the VA's proper reports. Again, if you go to www.va.gov, and once you get there, what you want to do is type in the acronym GWVIS, okay? It stands for Gulf War Veterans Information System. So you're into the formal VA report itself. Now, the last report that was published up there is from February of 2008.
Now, we actually have copies of that one, and we do make that available to our listeners that if they don't have access to a computer. It's a rather extensive report, but it's fascinating, tragic, to read and see what's going on. When, of course, you know that the media is going to cover this up. They're not going to tell the American people the truth. But go ahead. What about the Second Gulf War? Do we have
any figures on that? Gulf War, and what we're going to look at is on page 9 of the report for February 2008. At that time, there were 1,129,000 individuals that had been deployed to Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And the estimated number of living veterans as of February of 2008 was only 958,000.
Now, what's the difference then between the number?
About 100. It's huge.
All right, fine. Of course, that would take, of course, into account the war casualties, the 4,000 or so they'll admit to. But what
is
the rest?
160,000 plus.
Right. What did the rest of them die of? Do we have any idea? These are young, healthy people. I mean, certainly, a life insurance actuarial figures would, they could not write life insurance if there was going to be that sort of mortality upon young, healthy people. So, what do these people die of? Do we know?
the whole host of diagnoses that we get, a lot of cardiac, a lot of respiratory, a lot of neurological problems, all this stuff. I mean, very, very serious problems, and then obviously the skyrocketing suicides. So what we're seeing is the entire physiological system is insulted. And as a consequence, extraordinarily healthy individuals are crashing. And what we're seeing and what's reported again, first-hand reports and in the medical literature when you find it, not the peer-reviewed publication, but the first-hand stuff that's not published, is these guys are aging far beyond their time. So they're in their 20s, but they got illnesses and medical problems of 70-year-olds. And that's what I continuously hear day in and day out. Again, the only thing we can do is optimize, remain in function through proper nutrition and rest. There is obviously, you know, surgical techniques and physiological techniques that can be done. For example, with the spinal injuries, okay, we do have demyelinization of the spinal cord and the nerves from nerve agents and uranium. So that's like, acts like MS and ALS. But the other thing, too, is we have structural damage. And so you can get an orthopedic surgeon, which I think is what you did for an, yeah, that was your living.
That was my profession for about 35 years.
You can literally go in and say, for example, do decompression in the spinal cord, in the cervical neck, and do all these different things there, and try to reduce and clean out the core so that the spinal cord is no longer compressed or anything else. And that involves chipping away bone and cartilage and everything else. Or, you know, going in and, you know, freezing the neck by putting rods in there. So, again, you got all kinds of different things you can do, and you can do that, again, both in the cervical spine, the lumbar, and the thoracic spine.
Okay,
so we have serious problems that can, in some cases, be fixed through surgery. One of the things that showed up and what we see and happened to me again is the radiation causes radiation cataracts.
Hold that thought for a minute. I'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest has been Major Doug Grocke. You need to get his material. You need to hear his story. All right, Doug, go right ahead.
And what you have there is you have to go surgical intervention to repair the eye lens and cataract surgery. So they'll take and remove the entire lens. And what we have seen and what happened personally, it takes far longer because of the damage and the healing problems with cataract surgery than you do if you have cataract surgery, say, just an elderly person that doesn't have all the other complications. With Desert Storm and Iraqi Freedom, we have serious, serious immune deficiencies. We have problems all the way through. We have decalcification of the bone. And obviously, therefore, we have decalcification of the teeth, dephosphorylation of the teeth, and the dental health has gone to heck in a handbasket. We have tremendous hearing problems. We have tremendous neurological, neuromuscular problems. We have a warning. We have been given a warning. War is obsolete. The technology we have, the weapons we use, the destruction we brought, releases all kinds of stuff on the population of the world for which we don't have medical care and we have no ability to clean it up. So the question is, do we take the warning and live together in peace and alter our techniques, our weapons, and figure out what we need to do before it is too late?
Well, I certainly agree with you. The only trouble is you're approaching this thing from a logical point of view, and I very much fear that the people who hold the reins of power do not look at the world as you and I and so many other people do. And this is why we need to understand that there are really powerful spiritual forces which energize the people who have a political agenda, and their loyalty is not to America or even to humanity. But to a different vision of the world. So we have a real problem, and of course what I do, as you know, Doug, I talk 5 hours a day on the radio trying to make people understand the spiritual forces that are behind what we see as far as Gulf War illness, or behind the population control agenda, or behind water fluoridation, or behind putting toxic substances in our food like aspartame and the vaccines with the mercury in them and the genetically modified foods. All of these are an attack on the very essence of humanity and humankind. And why would anybody want to do damage to literally hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people? Well, that takes us into a whole different story. But, Doug, I want to thank you for everything you do. And please, anytime you have anything you'd like to bring up on our programs, I figure it's always a privilege to have you with us.
You know, Dr. Stan, one thing in the last little story. Some years ago, I was called over to Athens, Greece, and we were working with United Nations, UNESCO, and the Child and the Family. At the end of the conference, a lone voice started singing. and all the voices of the world, 180 worlds and nations in the United Nations spoke together. And the song was, "Let There Be Peace on Earth, and Let It Begin With Me."
God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I do hope you've enjoyed our program with Major Deb Rocky. We actually have a DVD put out by Joyce Riley on the Gulf War Syndrome. You need to see it. We have a four-tape set on depleted uranium. We have a four-tape set on the Gulf War Syndrome. These are all so important, but I suggest the DVD by Joyce Riley, and then our four-tape sets on Gulf War, our four-tape sets on depleted uranium. You must understand that most of what you have been told just is not true. The media is controlled. The major outlets are controlled. They were bought many years ago. And if you want to keep your job in the media, you go along with it, or you may be a victim of a liberal education, as I was, and I graduated from college. I had all these ideas, and it took me a long time before I could unlearn everything I learned in college. And I still find myself being influenced by the things I see on television or read in the newspapers or in books. And so much of this, of course, is controlled. And who controls them? Well, that's why you need my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. That's why you need my talk on the Forbidden Secret, and the syllabus goes with that. If you want to know where America's headed, why you need to see my material on planned population control. They really do intend to kill off most of the world's population. If you doubt that, of course, if you get any of our items, just ask for my little monograph on the population control agenda. It's available at our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can pull it down from there, or we'll be glad to send you a copy. We have a talk on population control. We have another talk it's called None Dare Call It Genocide. So we have those three DVDs. I think one's a video, two are DVDs. You need to understand that there really are people out there who intend to kill off the majority of the world's population. If you doubt it, why, you can go back to Elberton, Georgia, and see the great monument there put up by members of a secret society, where they talk about, maintaining the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature, and what they're really talking about is killing off over 90% of the world's population. You're never going to see this discussed on regular television. Why? Because they don't want you to know what we're up against. The organized evil that is out there, for truly we are involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of humankind. Well, let me suggest also the excellent DVD, The Eye of the Phoenix, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, going into the secret societies that were here when America was founded. And if you doubt that, we have books written by people on the other side who tell you what it's all about, including a book by Manly P. Hall. You have to ask for it specifically because it's not on our website, but it's called The Secret Destiny of America, written by Manly P. Hall, who is Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President Roosevelt's mentor. And of course, that's one reason why President Roosevelt appointed Masons to the Supreme Court to take God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. Why? Because they wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of our nation. These people hated the God that we worship because they worship a different God. So, remember our number, it's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, our website, RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 9 hours a day on the satellite feed. If you want to get an inexpensive satellite, you can listen to great satellite reception. Otherwise, of course, you can listen to us on the Internet and 9 hours a day. We have archive programs. We have live programs. We have MP3 programs. We have blog programs. And we want you to get the information. You can hear Joyce Riley there and Pastor Butch Paw and Chuck Chris Meyer as well on our satellite feed. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will certainly want to get some of the other items we have. We carry a book on Patton, George Patton. Did they actually kill General Patton? There's no question. If you study what happened to him, the man who killed him, that was ordered to kill him, has actually talked about this, and we carry, you'll actually read the book on Patton, which is available from Radio Liberty. We'll read the confession of the man who actually killed General Patton, but they did the same thing with Martin Luther King. And if they would kill Martin Luther King and Jack Kennedy, would they be concerned about you?
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar. The Senate Budget Committee is moving toward approving a budget blueprint that calls for less spending than the president.